Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October 28th, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am sehr gut.
I am so glad to hear that.
Ich bin sehr gut.
Jawohl. And there's a subset of people that are into Broadway shows that totally get what I just did.
Yes.
And for everyone else, that's okay. Ask me in person sometime, and I'll let you in on the joke. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm Hamilton.
Oh, ooh, that's brilliant. You just totally played into the Broadway thing. Well done, sir.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah.
And I'm playing this weekend in what we've called, or what has been called, the Hamilton of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You cannot get, for like a week, you have not been able to get tickets for any of the, whatever, four shows we're doing this weekend of Bitter Pill. So there you go.
No kidding. That's actually no really kidding. Awesome.
I know. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's really cool. Okay. Well, as long as we're here, we might as well talk about some technology stuff, and not just Broadway. So we have Microsoft's announcements from a couple of days ago. We now have the Surface Studio. And then yesterday, we had Apple's announcements. So we have the new Retina MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, which means that that Microsoft and Apple are both embracing touch on our computers, but in very different ways. And I was hoping that I could get the perspective from you guys on just what this means.
I'm going to actually interrupt and not interrupt, but I'm going to share someone else's perspective. Jason Snell put together a great piece about this, comparing the two. And he did a really good job sort of delineating the two very different paradigms. And it's about angles. Microsoft says it's okay to have a screen in front of you perpendicular to your keyboard that is a touch screen. And Apple says it's not.
Now, this doesn't surprise me.
Of course not. Right.
Yeah. And I'll make sure we have a link in the show notes to Jason's piece.
But on the other hand, Dave, the designer of the Surface Studio pointed out that when it tilts at a 20-degree angle that is the same as drafting boards. And so there was a conscious design point in there for people who use drafting boards, and that 20-degree angle is significant.
Yeah. I don't think either is bad, to be perfectly honest. I mean, on the Surface, I don't think either is bad. I haven't experienced the Surface Studio yet, so it's hard to say what my personal preference is. The thing about this is I know how insane Apple is about UX, user experience testing. And I also know they must have come up with, I mean, it's not impossible for them to create a touchscreen iMac, right? So my guess is that they've created one and tested it six different ways and decided, you know, nobody wants to have their hand in the air like they just don't care all day. you know, that gets tiring. That hurts the wrist. That's my feeling, is that Apple doesn't just have this stake in the ground because they have this stake in the ground. I think this particular one is there because they truly believe, based on what they've done internally. They don't focus group outside of the company much, if at all. But I think they've got evidence to back up the reason for doing what they're doing. Because a lot of people have asked, like, would you just give me a touchscreen iMac? And Apple basically says, you don't want one.
Yep. And Apple's thing for pretty much forever has been, don't give people what they want, give them what they need.
Well, my perspective on this is a little different. I think it's cool. I like the touch bar concept. I'm sure I'll be using it someday soon. But my first blush reaction was, you know, the last MacBook Pro was released in May of 2015. So it took 18 months for this. Now, I know there was some issues with skipping over Broadwell and some issues with Intel and getting the Skylake processor and Thunderbolt 3, but still, I kind of felt like they made an extraordinarily large fuss about a technology that looks like it was very difficult to implement and took them 18 months to get around to, and I kind of felt like it was out of sync too much attention was paid to something that took too long to produce. So that's how I kind of felt about it.
Well, yeah, definitely. And we went through a little bit of that yesterday here too, but yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. It was kind of a weird, the event was weird. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, yes, it was. Okay. When I look at the touch bar, not touch strip, touch bar on the new MacBook Pro, I just hear Apple executives from years past at events saying, no one wants to break the plane. Meaning when you have your hands down on the keyboard, you're in a horizontal plane. When you have to pull your hand up to touch the screen, you're now in a vertical plane. And Apple is sticking with don't break the planes. And I think Microsoft is going with, we're going to compromise and give you both planes.
Mm.
And what I'm betting is that if I were to be a Surface user, that I would not touch the screen unless I slid it down and had it in that drafting angle mode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I wouldn't want to break I don't want to wave my hands in the air like I just don't care, Dave.
You're right. Well, and that's the other thing is how close do you want to be to your screen when you're operating in a desktop computer type environment, right? And I realize that just because we've had this desktop computer type environment for whatever, 40 plus years or even longer, if you count the typewriter as being the sort of the foundation for that, there's no reason we have to stay in that. If there's a better paradigm, let's use it. But, in order to touch the screen, you have to be close to it. And tangentially, that actually makes me really question the touch bar and Apple's, what's the right way to say it? Apple's telegraphing. I mean, they said it, but if you want to run Final Cut Pro, you now should do it on a 15-inch MacBook Pro with extra screens, as opposed to a Mac Pro with extra screens.
Mm-hmm. Don't get me started.
And here's the question I have about that. What if you want to use a larger keyboard with Final Cut Pro that has all of your little widgets on it? I mean, we've all seen that where you've got all these different control surfaces that you want to use, and now you have to keep your laptop screen close enough to you to touch the bottom of it. So it's sort of, there's this weird thing here where it's like you just built this thing that doesn't fit with the paradigm that you espouse.
I touched on that yesterday in my article. I kind of felt like doors were closing. You feel like Apple's forcing you into one way of doing things.
But I don't even understand that way. Like if I want to use my laptop screen with other screens, I wouldn't do it in the layout that they had. They had the MacBook Pro, you're using its keyboard, right? And therefore its screen is right near your hands. Mm-hmm. And then above that were two other screens. Most people that I know, and maybe in a Final Cut Pro arrangement, that could make sense. But most people that I know that use a laptop with other screens push their laptop back away from them, use a separate keyboard, and have their screens in a one consistent arc.
That's what I do, except with the variation that since I have a 34-inch display, when it works, I operate in closed lid mode.
Well, then there's that.
Right? Yeah, which means that I lose the touch bar completely. And even if the lid is open, I'm still using, at my desk, a Matthias Tactile Pro keyboard and Kensington Orbit mouse or trackball.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So the message that I'm getting is, sure, you have all of this, these great new features on the keyboard for touch, but you're going to use them only when you're out of your office.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. It's interesting. I mean, look, it's the first step down this path. As we were saying yesterday, there's nothing that stops Apple from creating a magic keyboard, right, that has the touch bar integrated into it. It would mean putting the secure enclave chip into the keyboard itself so that Touch ID works. Mm-hmm. But okay, fine.
Whatever, fine.
Right. I mean, it's a little, yeah, it just makes you think a little bit differently about it. But it's like,
you know, why wasn't that ready yesterday? We were expecting IMAX, and then
I think this is a let's roll this out. Let's see how it does. Remember Touch ID when it came out? The day they released the iPhone 6 with and 6 Plus with Touch ID, they also released the iPad Mini, right? Or the iPad Mini Rev 2, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the iPad Mini Rev 2 did not have the Touch ID sensor in it, and now it does. I mean, the Rev 2 doesn't, but, you know, the Rev 3
does.
Yeah, and so does the Rev 4. The Rev 3 did, and all that was a 2 with the Touch ID sensor. So this is normal for Apple that they're like, no, we're going to go ahead and, you know, just we're not going to commit the whole product line to this yet. Let's see how it goes. Let's learn a little bit about it. We don't know how people are going to use this. Let's make sure we have a little bit more understanding and then go out. So I said Apple doesn't do focus groups. They actually do. They just sell us products to use them.
It's so they may have done one on the 3.5 millimeter jack on the MacBook Pro.
That too. Mm-hmm.
Apple has this MO where they slowly phase us in to whatever the new thing is. And they started that with a MacBook by putting USB-C on. And now they've moved that over to the MacBook Pro. So we have Thunderbolt 3, USB-C, and we have the Touch Bar. And now the next thing that comes out will add in the next part. And it builds and builds, and then over a year or two, all of a sudden we have this whole new thing. And I think that the MacBook Pro is just the next part in the transition to whatever the new thing is.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And since I just mentioned Thunderbolt and USB-C, we should probably take a couple minutes or a few minutes and get this sorted out so that people understand what this stuff is. Because we've got these ports on the MacBook Pro that look just like the ports on the MacBook, but they don't do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing, everybody's going to get all wavy arm when I say this. The ports are the same on the MacBook versus the MacBook Pro. Their functionality, however, is not as most of you waving your arms and yelling at your car radios or car stereos as you're driving are. Keep the car on the road. It's fine. We'll get this right.
Yep. Keep both hands on the wheel.
That's correct. USB has lots of different extensions to its name is what I'll say.
Nomenclature.
Thank you, John. Yes, there's much nomenclature associated with USB, but thankfully, it actually is pretty easy to make sense of it when you remember one important rule. Letters describe connectors. Numbers describe protocols. So
transport protocols versus the shape of connectors.
That's right. Yes. Letters describe the shape. The numbers describe the transport. So USB-A is the shape of the connector that's been in our computers for a long time. The sort of flat rectangular. Since the original iMac, right. The flat rectangular connector. USB-B is the square but not quite square connector that we're used to seeing on printers. The little house that we're used to seeing on our printers and some microphones and things like that. And then USB-C is the new connector that we're used to seeing on the MacBook and MacBook Pros. USB-1 is a transport protocol that works over USB A, B, and C. USB-2 is a transport protocol that works over USB A, B, and C. USB-3 is a transport protocol that works over USB A and C. I don't know that I've seen a USB-3 device working over USB B, but I'm not going to rule out its possibility. Now we add to the equation Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt 1 and 2 worked over the mini DisplayPort shaped connector.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderbolt 3 works over the USB-C connector. So USB-C can run USB 1, USB 2, USB 3, and Thunderbolt 3. And I would assume
and Thunderbolt,
Thunderbolt 2 as well. That's right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Of course, I know that because the USB-C I have on my MacBook is Thunderbolt 2.
Oh, of course it is. That's right. Yes, of course. Right. So it's letters versus numbers, and that's the easiest way I've found to make sense of USB and all of its nomenclature.
So why did Apple switch to USB-C? Well, it's so flexible and it's thinner. The DisplayPort was kind of blocky, the mini DisplayPort, and kept the new MacBooks from being as thin as they are, the new MacBook Pros. This is one of the advantages because it's kind of flat and thin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It also can carry enough power to charge a laptop. So that means Apple was able to remove the dedicated charger port.
And I may be wrong, but I believe that they had to go to USB-C connector protocol to achieve the full 40 gigabits per second of Thunderbolt 3.
I believe that's correct.
I think the old DisplayPort supported that electrically.
Interesting. Yeah, that would make sense. Sure. Yeah.
All right. So basically what this comes down to is we had a bunch of engineers who don't normally interact with humans decide that they're going to use USB to describe two different things and confuse the average person.
Yes.
Oh, that's not even the most confusing part. There's USB 3.0, which is the original 3.0, and then there's USB 3.1, which is the 10 gigabit per second version. But the industry decided that they didn't want to be shackled by 3.0, so they ginned up USB 3.1 Gen 1, which is USB 3.0 at 5 gigabits per second, and then there's USB 3.1 Gen 2, which is the 10 gigabits per second version, which is what you're getting on the new MacBooks, but the old MacBook Pros. But the old MacBook had USB 3.1, not old, but the current MacBook that we know, has USB 3.1 Gen 1, which is really 3 USB 3.0, which is the 5 gigabits per second. So you got to watch out for that, too, when you're buying a computer.
Jeez.
Whose fault is that? That sounds like when marketing and engineering mix and come up with a compromise.
Right out of Adobe.
Yeah. They should never be allowed to go to the same parties, ever.
Yeah, silos are good, people. No.
Yeah, no kidding.
They really aren't, but in this particular instance, maybe they would have been, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Holy crap. Okay, so now I've got it. We have a USB connector, and then we have a protocol that can go over the USB connector, and that protocol does not have to be USB specifically. So we can have USB and Thunderbolt protocols that go over the same type of USB connector.
And just you have USB-C on your computer doesn't mean it supports Thunderbolt 3, as we said. You have to have proper chipset, and that's why we were waiting for Skylake, because Skylake CPUs support Thunderbolt 3. And that's what I was complaining about yesterday in my article. It would have been nice to have a new 21-inch iMac with a Skylake processor instead of Broadwell, so that you could have Thunderbolt 3 and a brand new 21-inch iMac.
Well, we can live in hope, John.
Yeah. Hey, before we go, Jeff, I just want to point out, you know, we have USB A, B, and C, and we just define those as connector shape types. But, of course, we've also got USB micro A, USB micro B, USB mini A, USB mini B. There's lots and lots of options for USB out there. So, yeah. Fun.
Yeah, loads of fun.
Finally, USB shapes. Yes.
Let me get a word in here about connecting your new MacBook Pro to a display. As Phil Schiller pointed out, there are some LG displays that are out that Apple recommends that have a USB-C connector directly. So you can plug that LG display right into your MacBook Pro, your 2016 MacBook Pro. But if you got your own display that uses DisplayPort, then you're going to need what's called a USB-C to DisplayPort adapter. And there's some electronics in there to make this happen, and they're not cheap. They're $40 or so. So that's another piece of hardware you're going to need to connect to your own display if you buy a MacBook Pro.
So basically what you're saying is when my MacBook Pro shows up, that I still have to drop some serious money on adapters to get everything that I already have to work with the new computer.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if you've got like a Drobo drive that uses USB-A, then you're going to have a USB-C to USB-A adapter cable for that and plug it into your MacBook Pro. And then you're going to have a hub for maybe your USB-A flash drives to plug them into your MacBook Pro. Your desk is going to be covered with hubs and converters and adapters.
Oh, that's just awesome.
Yeah, bucket of awesome.
Well, now I have something else to look forward to. But I am still excited to get my new MacBook Pro because I am overdue for an upgrade.
Do you have your order in?
I believe I do. I'll just have to double check.
Cool.
Okay. So we are out of time. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
Fun stuff. My pleasure. Have a good weekend.
Yes, you too. And John, thank you for being here.
My pleasure as well.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. I hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday.